the values, how I was raised, lent very well into the profession of law enforcement. It's serving others. It's doing things for other people. Lawmakers and politicians don't want to know what the truth is. They don't want to know where the issues are, because then they would have to fix it and they wouldn't be able to blame other things. The majority of all crime has something to do with drugs.
Yeah.
That's why the crime was committed, because of drugs, or the murder was because of drugs, or the fight was because of drugs. The biggest thing we see now in public is homelessness. We're never going to fix the problem because we keep calling it homelessness. Every single one of them had a home. They were kicked out of their home, or they lost their home because of their drug and alcohol abuse. No one wants to be out laying on a sidewalk, rotting in their own skin. We have to start addressing the real issue so we can actually fix it.
Welcome to today's episode of Falling to Freedom, where addiction ends and faith begins. The weekly podcast that brings thoughtful, informed, and challenging discussions about addiction to the forefront of everyone's minds. We join our host now, Chad Lacombe, for today's topic.
You know, I know in Riverside, we're all very familiar with you, and I know a part of your campaign right now is just trying to get out there and let people get to know you. But one of the things that struck me, you know, in the few times that I've been able to see you and hear you talk and speak with you, is you're just down to earth, just a regular guy. And I think most people are desiring that in California. Instead of a smooth-tongued politician, just a regular person to meet the needs of Californians. So you mind just sharing a little bit about yourself real quick?
No, absolutely. And I think you're exactly right with that. And I think that's what's resonating the most as I travel this state with people speaking at places like this and having events like this all across the state, is everyone is just like, hey, You're just one of us. You're just a regular guy. You're personable. Those types of things, which is not common in today's political world. So I'm not from California. I'm a transplant. I came from Utah to achieve the California dream. I grew up with a dream of going to California and knowing that I had to come here to make it.
What year was that?
I came here in 1989.
Okay.
So 11 is when I got my love for California. I came to Santa Monica to play in the Little League World Series.
Nice.
And I spent a week here, immersed in Santa Monica. It was amazing. I went home, told my mom and dad I was moving, and they told me I had to wait till I was an adult. Yeah. And I did, but that was in my head. I knew that when I was an adult, when I was done with school, when I was done with doing what I was, you know, doing there, and I was playing baseball at the time, when that was over, I knew I'd end up in California, and that's where I was going to make my life. And I did, and I have a perfect life here. I'm the oldest of three boys. My mom and dad raised three good kids. I have a brother that's a judge and another brother that's in law enforcement also.
Okay.
And they did well. Starting young, my mom was 16, my dad 18, and they did good. And I was raised with a work ethic. I was raised with integrity is everything. Mm-hmm. The values, how I was raised, lent very well into the profession of law enforcement. It's serving others. It's doing things for other people. You sacrifice yourself to help other people. And it's all about integrity. It's all about honor and those types of things. So law enforcement was a natural, I guess. It fell into it.
Sure. And you've been in law enforcement for over 30 years, right?
I have 32 years.
Okay.
So I started in 1993. Mm-hmm. And I put myself through San Bernardino's Academy, San Bernardino Sheriff, but Riverside hired me right after I finished the Academy. Mm-hmm. Finished top of my class in the Academy, hired by Riverside, and I've been here ever since. I had a great career, a lot of different assignments, internal affairs, drugs. I did some boat patrol. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do in the Sheriff's Office, and I was fortunate enough to be able to do a lot of them.
You got a little bit of experience in pretty much everything.
Absolutely. So outside of work is just the required thing that you have to do to take care of your family.
Yeah.
I'm primarily a husband. I mean, that's my job, is a husband, a dad, and now a grandpa, a papa. You know, having little ones run to me when I get home and just sprint and want hugs, yelling papa, papa, papa. That's what life is about.
And they're obviously on board with your run for the governor?
Oh, they are. They love it.
Yeah.
They love the shirts. They love the you know, seeing me on billboards and on signs and people's cars and everything else. They think it's fantastic. So,
well, that's good. So, you know, kind of the focus of our podcast, you know, is addiction as a whole of society problem, you know, with especially in this country. And I just wanted to know, like, from your perspective, being in law enforcement and the things that you're seeing, how big of a problem is addiction and substance abuse and the things that go with it in, at least in Riverside? I mean, that, but yeah, in California is
yeah, that's a fantastic question, and I wish more people would ask it. And really, I wish more people would ask the experts, which law enforcement is the experts in this arena, which is why law enforcement is completely left out of the conversation, because lawmakers and politicians don't want to know what the truth is. They don't want to know where the issues are, because then they would have to fix it and they wouldn't be able to blame other things. Yeah. So doing this for 32 years, and I learned very early on as a patrol deputy, and then certainly while I was in the drug enforcement world, I was in undercover narcotics. There is the vast majority, you can't say all because there are some exceptions, but the majority of all crime has something to do with drugs.
Yeah.
There's either a drug addiction, there was a drug relation of that's why the crime was committed because of drugs, or the murder was because of drugs, or the fight was because of drugs. There's always, always a connection to drugs. And what we are seeing now, the biggest thing we see now in public is homelessness.
Yeah.
And here's the issue
there too.
Well, absolutely so. So much so that we're never going to fix the problem because we keep calling it homelessness.
Right.
Every single one of them had a home. They were kicked out of their home or they lost their home because of their drug and alcohol abuse, that an addiction that ended up more often than not creating a mental issue.
Sure.
That's what we see on the street. So the drug-induced psychosis is the craziness that you see on the street. It's not, we didn't wake up one day and all of a sudden mental illness was a thing that never existed before.
No.
Something caused it. Mm-hmm. And we can take it back and really show in California a direct relationship with the legalization of drugs in California in 2014 and the skyrocket of homelessness, of theft, of everything that goes along with it. So a very simple answer is with drug addiction, it has everything to do with law enforcement. And if we would truly address the issues with drug use and drug addiction and get these people help and stop the mass influx of drugs, that desire for us to have the drugs in the first place, we have to start addressing the real issue, the real cause, so we can actually fix it. And when we do, then we won't have the issue with mental illness. We won't have the issue with drug addiction. The nature of drugs, some people go to that for help with pain, for mental pain or real pain, and then you're obviously addicted to it and you have to have it, and then it's just a straight spiral downward.
Absolutely.
We have to realize that is an issue, and people just need help. No one wants to be out laying on a sidewalk, rotting in their own skin, and just preparing or wondering when they're going to die, when they're going to pass away. No one wants that. Everyone wants security. Everyone wants community. Everyone wants, that's what makes our heart whole. That's what makes our soul whole. And something caused that to move into the drug world. Mm-hmm. And that's the downside of the failure of your life or your family's life or anything like that. And we as a society need to start being real about the issue, real about the cause, real about how dangerous it is, and start addressing it and getting people help so we can break that cycle of addiction, break that cycle of use, break that cycle of knowing that drugs could be an answer to help you with whatever it is you're dealing with, and we could really, really get a handle on it.
Yeah. So that's been our experience, especially with this podcast. You know, everybody that we talk to, whether it is law enforcement, whether it's people that are involved with dealing with homelessness issue, I mean, everybody says the same thing, that at the root of most of it is addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, homelessness, 90%, probably better than 90% of long-term homelessness, there's addiction, or like you said, mental illness, which is often caused by the addiction. So, I mean, we're in total agreement. If you want to deal with the problem, you're not going to do it without dealing with that. And
right.
California is just blind to it. So California's stance right now is, you know, there's a term, permissive harm reduction, right? So basically, permissive harm reduction says that it's bigoted or it's judgmental to look at someone that's using and on the streets and in their own feces or whatever it is, right? And to tell them, you need to get cleaned up. You need to get off drugs. So California's stance right now, currently, is to basically make them comfortable. you know, make them safe. We'll give you clean needles. We'll give you a place to do this, and not advocating for abstinence and getting away from it. So that's California's current policy. I'm assuming it would be completely different with you.
Completely different. Yeah. I mean, this is this when you really talk to anyone in politics that has that stance, all you have to do and engage them in a conversation, they're eventually going to get angry and leave because it's built on a lie. Yeah. And they have nothing behind that outward lie to back that up. It defies common sense to take that stance. And if that's the permissive attitude is permissive and just let it go, if that's the case, why are we dumping tens and 20 and $40 billion a year to nonprofits that now we're learning do nothing to help the situation? We're not trying to help them. We're making it worse, but that money's disappearing. You can't say we're going to dump billions of dollars at it if we're at the same side we're saying, no, it's okay. Yeah. And if you're going to say it's okay, then it's not my okay. I'm not going to pay for all these people to do this. So quit putting taxpayer money to it. But the problem with that is there's a substantial cost on the backside. The backside of what it costs businesses when these people are destroying their business, destroying the building, stopping people from coming into businesses, the damage that they cause, in a psychosis rage, the damage that they're causing in vandalism, the amount of theft that goes on to support these drug habits, because the regular person has no idea how expensive these drugs are. You can't have a completely addicted problem with drugs and not steal for the money. You have to. And no one wants to admit to that. It's like push it to the side, and the politicians want that permissive. They want it all to happen because they use that to not only siphon money to people that are going to support them for something else, but then they can use that every election to say, I'm going to address it. I'm going to address it. Yeah. And none of them are.
Homelessness is a great one. What is it, like in the last 7 years, California spent like $40 billion and the problem got worse.
And what's worse is $24 billion of that money, they have no idea where it even went. No idea. How do you lose $24 billion? That just shows that they're... On purpose. It's not going to fix the problem. You don't fix a problem by addressing the symptom. You fix the problem by addressing the problem. And the problem is drug use and drug addiction. Yeah. And we have to admit it. We have to start being honest. And as soon as you are, cops are honest about it. And to be extremely honest, we don't want them all in jail. We'd rather have them in rehab. Sure. Because when they get out of jail, if they haven't fixed the emotional drive that's making them steer toward drugs and then causing that addiction, that cycle, if they're not addressing that, if they're not in an environment where it's going to keep them clean, they're just going to go back to the problems that make us have to respond in the first place. So we don't want them necessarily going to jail.
Yeah.
We want them in rehab, get them clean, get them sober, and make them productive again so they can get back on with their lives.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be one of my questions to you, but you pretty much just answered it. Like, if you're elected governor, will you support more like treatment, more substance abuse treatment for people, and advocating abstinence rather than these permissive harm reduction policies? Like, get them the help that they need.
I will guaranteed eliminate our homeless issue in California, what we call homeless. I will never call it homeless. After I'm the governor, we'll make it a felony to use the word homeless. We're going to call it what it is, and we are going to fix it. So it is a drug and alcohol induced psychosis. We are going to address the drug and alcohol abuse, intoxication, and addiction that is causing this whole cycle. And the only way to do that is to supply them with the out. So all of the billions that are disappearing that we're putting toward this fictitious thing of homeless, we're going to stop that immediately. We won't even need all of that money. And then it's going to be directed toward the substance abuse treatment centers, the mental illness treatment centers, and making sure that these people are rescued from this environment that they're in.
So what's your position on faith-based programs? So we have a program called Fully Restored Ministries, where it's faith-based, right? We believe that we are spirit, soul, and body, and the problem is spirit, soul, and body. And so you have to address those three things in taking care of that problem. But California is pretty much against any type of faith-based.
Yeah,
that's the only one, but what about that being an option?
So it's not the only one, but the empirical evidence out there is it's the most successful.
Yeah.
And so why are we ignoring it? Why are we not pushing that? Why are we not directing him to those? It's this, it's an anti-religion government that has completely abandoned what made America great.
Yeah.
Someone with a true faith in God and a belief in God and a belief in something better and a belief in our how you handle your problems based on the Bible. And I mean, there's roadmaps for every issue you could possibly have that have already happened in history, and there's a roadmap to fix it. And if you agree with that and you abide by that, you can't help but get better. You can't help be on a better path. And why we would not push that and enforce that with people is absolutely beyond me.
At least make it an option.
Right, but it shows we don't really want to fix the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, because California right now, I mean, they won't put any money towards or fund any type of faith-based program, which to me, it's like, you're basically cutting the feet off of a whole segment that can help people. Right? But like you said, if they truly wanted to fix the problem, they'd be doing things different than they are.
Right.
But it's pretty obvious they don't.
So this is the whole thing. We keep using the word problem. Something unique about me being in this race that has never been in a California election is my entire successful, irrefutable, successful adult career is based on problem solving. That's all I do every single day. My daughter, several years back, growing up with my daughter, when my daughter wanted, I mean, she knew she was daddy's little girl, but if she wanted emotional support, she went to mom, and if she wanted something fixed, she knew that I was the one fixing it. It's bred into me on the job training every single day is going out and fixing problems. I fix it based on common sense, on knowledge, on evidence and everything else.
On the truth.
It has to be the truth.
Yeah.
And then you fix it. It doesn't matter who's telling you what, you fix the problem. And we've never had that in California. We have never elected someone that truly was a problem solver that was going to go into that office to make California better and fix the things that we all know are broken.
Yeah, that's great. I wanted to ask you a few questions, just more on the campaign, if you're okay with that. So I have some friends that, you know, were kind of maybe privy to some information concerning your campaign stuff prior to making your formal announcement. And it seemed like maybe summer of last year you were thinking about running for governor. And then maybe like a few months after that, we got word, oh, he's not going to run, he's not going to do it. We were bummed. But then after the inauguration, we got word he's running. And then shortly after that, you announced your campaign. What changed? What changed at the inauguration?
I'm going to have to interrogate out of you to figure out where you got your information. So that's very, very true. And I will tell you something about my life, and my family knows this. I have never cared about myself. I am always trying to help other people, do something for other people. I get joy out of helping someone else, and I never do anything for myself. And I have to be really honest that as we were moving toward this, oh my gosh, this is a real thing. I'm going to run for governor. And I start looking into my life is going to change drastically. I have a beautiful, perfect life here. And for the first time in my life, I became very selfish. And I chose I said I was not going to do it because I was not going to not only subject my family to the ugliness that's going to come with this campaign, but also winning. I like being the sheriff, and I've been told by one particular other sheriff that's now a governor, being sheriff is better. And I took that very personal and selfish, and I said, I'm going to stay being the sheriff. This is all I want to do. And then it started eating at me over the next month. my conscience was getting the better of me, because that's not how I think. I've never been selfish. I've never done something for myself. Mm-hmm. And the thing that changed it was, I don't know, I mean, I've listened to it many times, but it was the inaugural speech. And I'm glad that it's recorded, because I've gone back and I've just read it, and I felt those same things. And there are certain things, especially if you're a churchgoer and you go to church, you've read something 1,000 times, and that one time you go to church and it's like it smacks you right in the face, and it's like, oh my gosh, the pastor's talking to me today. Yeah. And you get something totally different out of it. And I think that happened during the inauguration. And I was so convicted watching him, a man who has absolutely everything, wanting to be the president to help us.
Yeah.
And whether you hate him or whether you love him, I really don't care. I know that I related it the same thing. The man who has everything, that is benefiting, he's being harmed by being the president compared to what he was before. And the love for this country and the things that he said about why he was doing it and what he's going to do and how beautiful America is, I was truly convicted that I was making the wrong decision, that I had to do this for Californians. I had to do this for my family. I had to do this for everyone else's family. And when we walked away from there, I told my wife, I said, honey, I'm sorry, but I'm doing it. Yeah. And I think she had a feeling of some of the things that I was saying leading up to it, but she's been on board from the very beginning. And it truly was a heart moment for me, a soul searching moment, listening to that speech and reflecting of what it truly meant to me, not exactly the words he said, but what it was meaning to me. And I know I have to make California the place that I moved here for.
Yeah, well, we're glad. So 2 other quick questions, because I know you got an event to get to. So I own a business as well, and I have friends that own businesses, and some of them, you know, don't really know a lot about you, but are excited when they hear some of the things that you say. And one question that kind of comes up is for economics, right? So there's a big jump between managing Riverside County Sheriff's budget and managing the 4th largest economy in the world. So I believe California just overtook Japan as the 4th largest economy in the world. Do you have anybody in mind that would be senior economic advisor or anybody like that that would be able to come alongside and help with that stuff?
I do. There are many options. There are many people volunteering, and there are many people that I will seek out. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you, oh, it's going to be this person today, because that may change next year. But I will tell you, it's not going to be a big jump between the sheriff and where we have in the government, because the sheriff's department budget is $1.3 billion. Mm-hmm. That's unfathomable to imagine for almost all of us. I know that I'm not the expert in that. So I have a staff of experts knowing what my vision and mission is, and they are held to that mission and that standard. And the leadership ability of me selling that argument and having them just wide-eyed, yes, let's do this, and work harder than they've ever worked before to make sure that at the end of the year, my vision and my goals were met with that $1.3 billion budget, staying under budget by as many dollars as they can keep it to, not by millions. I want it down to the dollar where we're spending it. I will do that same thing. It's the same fiscal management perspective that I will take to California. It's just going to involve more people managing it and doing it, and then someone with the same belief and ability that I have that I can trust to make sure they do it.
That's awesome. You're smart enough to surround yourself with even smarter people that can catch the vision and make it happen.
Yes, absolutely. I'm smart enough. The difference between me and most every other person, whether it's a leader, especially elected officials, is I will not surround myself with people that agree with me. Yeah. Because if everybody just agrees with me, when I fall off a cliff, I'm not going to have anybody to say, why didn't you stop me from falling off that cliff? Because everybody agreed with me. I want people to tell me, and so I can make educated guesses, educated, you know, reasonable solutions and answers to whatever it is that we're, that dilemma that we're surrounded with. And yeah. if everybody agrees with me, why do I need anybody? Yeah, I just right. have myself. So you have to, it has to be different opinions, different perspectives, different backgrounds, different ideologies, so we can come up with the best solution for California.
That's good. Okay, last question, so you can get to your event. So California right now has a super majority in the Congress, right? So in the Senate, they have 30 seats.
Yes.
Republicans have 10.
Yes.
In the House, they have 49. And Republicans have 9. So what can you realistically do, you know, if you're elected governor and there's a supermajority in Congress, they could actually overturn your vetoes with a two-thirds majority. So what can you realistically do to help us here in California?
There's going to be a massive push from those people that are running Sacramento to keep me out, because they know I have the solution to get through that. They know that I'm in it. They know I have the answers. They know that I'm going to affect major change in that building. And they are going to be forced to work with me for Californians rather than special interests. So the power of veto is huge. The power of the governor's agenda is enormous. The governor controls everything. It's the legislature's leadership that carries out the governor's mission, the governor's agenda. And they will do the same thing. If they don't, they will get nothing of the things that they want. And perfect example, they pass a bill that they really want in June. Why do I have to sign it in June? They can't veto it unless I say no. If I'm not going to approve their bill, they can't do it anyway. Why would I veto it? Why would I, you know, if I veto a bill and give them the option at the time to overrule that veto, why would I do that?
So there's things you can do.
Oh, there are.
I'm ignorant, so that's why I'm asking.
So there is a final close of session. Nothing happens after that final close of session, and it's at midnight on a specific date. So why would I not wait until 11:58 to give them back all of the bills that they gave me all year? That's what's going to happen if they chose to fight. If they're going to choose to fight me and go against the will of the voters, then their life is going to be absolutely miserable. And I will make sure, being the vocal person that I am and the truth teller that I am, that none of those individuals that did that will get elected again. And that is their real mission of being in Sacramento, just to keep getting their reelection. Their reelection to assembly, so then they can switch over to the Senate side and vice versa. It's all about them staying there for the control, the benefits, the pay, the kickbacks, the trips that they don't report, all of these other things, the benefits of being there that they don't want to end. And if they're afraid of not being elected, they're going to be on my side, because they will not want to be exposed. And it's not going to be as difficult as what people think.
Okay, well, that's very encouraging, because sometimes you look at the current system and it seems hopeless.
They want us to believe that, so we don't even try.
Right.
They want Republicans to not even try, because it's impossible. Why are you even trying? Don't waste your time. Don't put your family through all the heartache. You can't do anything anyway. That's what they want you to believe.
Right.
I know different, and I'm the last person that they're going to either intimidate out or lie their way to get me to get out. It isn't going to happen.
Well, Chad, thank you for spending this time with us. And
absolutely.
At the beginning of your event, we hope the event goes great.
Very good.
And looking forward to you being the governor of California.
Very good. I appreciate being here. Good job.
God bless.
For coming out here.
Yeah. God bless.
Thank you for being a part of this much-needed conversation as we expose the raw truths about addiction. Don't forget to like, follow, and most importantly, share. Remember, addiction is the dirty little secret that every family deals with, but nobody wants to talk about.